the walkout ends, who won, why the fines won't go away, what the Democrats accomplished, the marriage amendment advances Butler to the Final Four, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 1, 2011.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, the walkout ended. After 5 weeks, the Democrats in the Indiana House of Representatives came back from Illinois. The Democrats made a show of their return as they entered the east door of the State House as a group surrounded by union workers who supported their walkout. The Democrats say that concessions on a pair of labor bills and a pair of education bills brought them back. As to the possibility of a second walkout this session, Minority Leader Pat Bauer said, quote, "We're here to work." There were no speeches to mark the return, and the welcome from Republicans was lukewarm.
Forward would like to welcome all of our members back. It is refreshing and pleasant to see a full chamber, and appreciate the commitment to continue working through the calendar.
We did a time out, and we took time to really educate the public on the kind of legislation was going through that we felt that was just a little bit over the line in terms of normal sessions that we've had.
Why did the Democrats come back? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Schella. Ann Delaney, did the Democrats cave in?
Oh, no, I don't think so at all. I mean, they succeeded in doing what they wanted to do, which was first to focus public opinion on some of these things that were not campaigned on, that were being railroaded through the legislature. And then they were concerned about the war on the middle class, and they were able to scale back vouchers, considerably scale it back. I mean, compared to what the first offer was, and the same thing with the right to work provision and the prevailing wage, or whatever they call it, common wage they call it now, and a number of other incidents where they were able to put a little bit more of the brakes on the radical agenda of the Republican majority.
It was clear all along this would end only if the Republicans gave in to demands or if the Democrats cracked. What's your take?
Well, clearly, public opinion got to the Democrats. They overplayed their hand when they were given a mulligan after right to work was taken off the table, but then they extended the list of things that they supposedly cared about. And over the course of time, public opinion clearly was not on their side, and they were starting to feel that. The public opinion survey that I saw had 30% approved of what they did, 66% disapproved of what they did, and that didn't help them at all. And I don't think the public quite understood why they weren't doing their jobs. And also, I think the fines probably had a hand in it, too, because some of those folks really didn't want to have to keep seeing that add up over a long period of time.
Do you find it unusual that nobody went to the microphone upon returning to explain why they'd been away, or from the Republican standpoint to chastise them for being away?
No, because I think there had been so much posturing on both sides prior to that. I mean, look at the semantics that have been employed here. We saw snippets of it even in the introduction. Democrats referred to this, of course, as a period of reflection or a timeout. Republicans have been talking about it as a strike, or their counterparts going AWOL. So this has been a very energetic attempt on both sides to try to curry public favor and make sure that the electorate is on its side. Now, I don't know, it's cliche, and I know it's probably a cop-out to say we don't know really how this turns out until 2012, but I don't think we really do know how this plays because there are some small victories for both here. I mean, the Republicans had a distinct advantage here. Basically, they were fighting this with a bazooka versus a pistol when you've got a 20-seat margin to begin with. So Democrats can come away, though, saying we did get these victories. We did soften some of these bills, and we did get right to work off the table. So they have some things they can brag about. They also energized labor and their base, which may, if you can keep that going and sustain over a period of time, may have some effect in 2012. But Republicans, because they have that 20-seat majority, their agenda is largely intact, so they both kind of win in the short term.
Your take, who won?
Well, I think that the initial rounds go to the Republicans because they got them back. The Democrats did make their points, and I do think that they'll have an opportunity in 2012, depending on what happens between now and then, but I do think that they've got some things that they can take now to the electorate. A lot will depend on what the maps turn out to be, and I think one of the things that happens from this is that the Democrats will have a very hard time now walking over the maps. You know, if this had been a short walkout and they come to get really onerous maps at the end, then they could have walked out again. But I think now they'll have a harder time doing that over the maps.
Well, in fact, Speaker Bosma says that Minority Leader Pat Bauer offered to give a written promise not to walk out again.
I think they've accomplished what they wanted to accomplish. And now we focused attention on the radical agenda. When you listen to what they're saying on the
floor.
But
you can't, but there's no stopping it, right?
Well, there probably isn't. I mean, you've got representatives saying we shouldn't have a minimum wage and workers should work 70 hours and there is no such thing as rape or incest. I mean, you have people saying that, and I wonder what country or what century we're in, but this is the Republican majority and their radical agenda.
And it is a huge majority. It's a 60-40 majority.
Doesn't
that the
make
voters
them right,
overwhelmingly
they
supported
didn't get voted
last
overwhelmingly
session.
For that.
Yes, they did, Ann. That's
not
what you're missing
in this.
Not
the agenda that they're pushing,
that's
Mike.
What you're missing this whole thing.
No, they didn't
yes,
get elected
did.
To push
all right.
that agenda.
60-40.
Nope.
Moving
Sorry.
Forward. The Democrats were assessed fines during the walkout that total as much as $3,150 per member. The fines will total more than $100,000, money that will go into the House budget. House Speaker Brian Bosma says he's working with the Democrats to establish a payment plan for those who desire one, but fines won't be waived.
I'm confident that the fines will remain. They will not. They were not put into place as a negotiating point. As I indicated at the start, if they are to be rescinded, it would have to be by motion adopted on the floor of the House.
At this point, we have to pay the fines that we stood out for. Pay the fines, we have to pay the fines. We stand up for America and for working men and women within our state and our public educational system.
Greg Porter there, state rep from Indianapolis. Mike McDaniel, will those fines prevent future walkouts?
I don't think fines by themselves will, but it is a factor. These are citizen legislators. Not all of them are rich. They don't all have the means to survive over the course of a long session without at least supplementing their income with the income they get from being legislators. So it does have an effect, and if anybody tells you it doesn't, they're kidding themselves or they're not being honest about it. So it does have an effect, but I don't think it by itself causes or prevents walkouts from the future.
So just yesterday we saw some strife in the House because the Democrats learned that they potentially weren't going to get a paycheck, that they owed more than what they
right.
were receiving. And so the Speaker talked about payment plans. Apparently they're going to take out 20% per check until it's paid off. Could be a long time.
Could be a long time, and you know, you still have the question of whether it's constitutional or not. You know, just because you're
Will somebody
elected,
challenge that?
I don't know. But, you know, you've got to look at that and say they have First Amendment rights themselves, and there is no slavery provision in this state. So we'll see whether or not it's constitutional. But it's the first time they've ever imposed the fines. The fines have been assessed
been
before,
been
and they've always
and
been waived. But, you know, as radical as this group is, it's not surprising. And I think our caucus is serious about it. If it turns out that they are constitutional and they have to pay them, it's important for the Democratic caucus to stand up for the middle class, even if it means they have to pay money to do it.
And that's what they said all along. So the Democrats put themselves in a bad position here, didn't they, if they were hoping to have these fines waived?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they put themselves in a position that they felt was appropriate, and the fines came after that. So, you know, and the precedent has always been that the fines have been waived before. However, the Speaker did say in the midst of all of this that, you know, I think it was Representative Brown who said something about the fines have always been waived before, And the speaker interjected, well, I wouldn't be sure about that this time. So they may have put themselves ultimately in the position of having to owe this money, but I don't think that was any part of the calculation when they went out, and I don't think it'll be a part of the calculation in the future.
Part of the discussion right now is whether this walkout actually costs money. The Democrats say that all the work's going to get done by April 29th, and if that's the case, they can say that actually money was saved because they're paying the fines and there was no extra cost. The governor has a television ad on the air through Aiming Higher, his PAC, that said that the cost of this was $400,000. Who's right?
I'll replay the answer I gave you a few minutes ago. I mean, this is the semantics game that we've been seeing, and the posturing and the spin. I mean, it's been fascinating to watch as this has unfolded, because clearly the governor and Republicans want to portray this as, people taking their paychecks and running out of town without doing their work. As Democrats have been quick to point out, we've been busy over there. The taxpayers haven't been supporting us. These were party funds.
Right.
And and this isn't going to be the end of it. I mean, we'll see. Believe me, I'm sure we will see, as we discussed earlier, this will come up again in 2012, probably in ads on both sides.
And you also have the governor, I might point out here, skirting the spirit of of the ethics law from last time around by raising with a $10,000 a person fundraiser for Aiming High during the legislative session.
Because it's for a political action committee, it's not for him directly.
I understand the distinction, Mikey, but he's using
it. It's not against the law.
I didn't say it was against the law. What I
said,
Michael, if you would let me finish.
They need to change the law. They need to change the law.
I said he was skirting the spirit of that law, and that's exactly what he's doing.
All right, moving on. One of the things the Democrats were holding out for was changes in the school voucher bill sought by the governor. Republicans agreed to two significant changes in amendments that won bipartisan support. First, they approved an amendment that says no student could receive more than one voucher per year. Then they agreed to cap the number of vouchers issued statewide.
In year one, it'll be 7,500. In year two, it would be 15,000 scholarships that could be used. So this will allow us to start slow, review what's been happening, and make sure it makes sense moving forward.
Representative Tom Dermody of LaPorte there, John Katzenberger, was that worth holding out for?
Well, I won't argue one way or the other whether it was worth holding out for, but this is an important subject. This is a major, major shift potentially in how Indiana funds schools, and the ramifications need to be considered. The more attention that comes to vouchers, the better it is, I think, for the process. We're talking about, along with the changes in the school funding formula, I can't emphasize how large this change would be when you throw the vouchers on top of it. So it's something that really needs a lot of attention.
Essentially what they did here is they delayed the impact of the bill for a year, the total impact of the bill, which is the same thing that happened with the public works bill. They got concessions that delayed the full impact for a year.
That's one thing, but then also tightened the eligibility requirements in terms of income. When this bill started its trek toward likely signing by the governor, it began with, I think, a lot higher threshold
right.
in terms of what the family income could be before you would qualify for this assistance. Now it's targeting more needy families and those with less income at their disposal. So it wasn't just a delay. That's a big part of it, certainly, is to put it off and see how this unfolds in a little bit more.
And it wasn't just a delay
fashion.
on the common wage issue either, because it goes from $250,000 to $350,000. But remember, at the start, it was $1 million. Okay, so there's a substantial difference.
But they had that concession early on in the walkout.
And they also have other labor concessions that were in there in terms of the projects in universities and schools. So there are other things.
But here's my take. They held out for 5 weeks. If they'd held out another week, because Speaker Bosma had indicated that they wouldn't move the bill deadline again, don't you think they could have gotten much more if they'd held out one more week?
No, I don't think they would have at all. I witnessed a conversation in the hallway this week that I never thought I would see. I saw, especially after what's gone down over the last 5 weeks, I saw labor leaders screaming and yelling at Democrat members of the House caucus, and House caucus members screaming and back at labor, and basically the labor union guys were saying, we're not sure what you got for us out of this. So even they were unhappy with what happened at the end of this. They don't think they made major gains at the end result of this 5 weeks. And this happened out in the middle of the hallway in front of everybody. If you were within 100 feet of them, you heard everything they were saying. They were screaming so loud at each other. So I think there's, as Suzanne Crouch said, it's muddy as to what they won with their 5 weeks. And that is an understatement because nobody thinks that all they did was delay some legislation and really didn't change much at the end of the day.
No, there's more than that, Michael. And you're not stating
I'm just
it correctly.
Telling you. Well, John, I saw what I saw.
Quickly.
What is true? I was there. You were.
I'm not
quickly.
Talking about the yelling. I'm talking about the underlying
For opponents
facts.
Of vouchers, this is all cold comfort, the concessions. But one other thing that is noteworthy is students, before they qualify, will have to attend public school
for a year.
For a year, two semesters,
right.
Not including kindergarten.
Not including kindergarten.
And that's
different a major
from what,
concession.
I think that is important because what other states have sought and what was initially sought here was you could basically go right into private school without
regardless,
ever sampling
regardless
public
Regardless of how this comes out, expect a constitutional challenge to
Oh,
this.
Sure. Clearly. Sure. Clearly, because tax money is going to something other than common schools.
There are major implications for this.
All right, time now for viewer
That's
feedback.
That's not common school definition.
Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, which party gained the most from the Democratic walkout? Your choices are A, the Republicans, B, the Democrats, or C, Ask Me in 2012. The last week's question was, what should politicians who took donations from Tim Durham do with the money? 34% said give it back. 10% said wait to see if there's a conviction. 56% said I don't care. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. The proposed permanent ban on same-sex marriage in Indiana won bipartisan support this week. The state Senate voted 40-10 for the marriage amendment, a vote taken with the Senate gallery closed. A disruption by supporters of same-sex marriage led Senate leadership to take the unusual step of conducting this debate with only the media watching. Nevertheless, most of the arguments were in opposition to the marriage amendment.
Discussion on the resolution. Acceptance for same-sex couples will soon win out. But while all of this change is occurring around this nation, Indiana is looking back.
The family is the basic unit of our society and has been since Adam and Eve is created, and marriage is and should be the union of one man and one woman.
Republican Dennis Cruz there, preceded by Democrat Vice Simpson. John Chuanis, is it right to close the gallery?
I hate to see the gallery closed. I mean, this is the General Assembly doing the work of the people they represent. It is the people's house. I think it sends, symbolism is very important in politics and state governance, and I think it sends, I understand why it was done. I mean, they didn't want to have the interruptions that they'd had the
well,
day
Well, there was
prior.
There was an interruption the day before, and right. So they asked people to leave and closed it. But then on the day of this vote, they closed it.
Preemptive close. I think it just sends a wrong signal, a wrong
they
message.
They should have left it open. I mean, if somebody causes a ruckus, they should respect the process and allow the people to do their work on the floor. So if you have somebody causing a problem, remove them. Let the rest of the people stay. Don't close the entire gallery for good.
Should every disruption be addressed?
I think any disruption that interferes with the business needs to be addressed, but doesn't have to be addressed this way. This is like swatting a fly with a sledgehammer. It isn't necessary, and it isn't a good precedent to set.
Your thoughts?
I have no problem with closing down the gallery when it is disruptive. I think we saw that in the House side with, I think, one time with the labor dispute. We saw it on the Senate
Rachel,
side.
We saw it twice. We saw it
was
twice
in the House. Yeah. Okay, I only saw it once. But I did see it in the Senate side this last week, and it was disruptive, no question about it. But I think you wait until it happens rather than doing it preemptively.
The marriage amendment now won't be dealt with for two more years.
Right, and that same language has to pass, and before it would go to the voters. The
referendum.
Right.
The Democrats and opponents of the measure keep talking about attitudes changing rapidly. Will attitudes change rapidly enough that a referendum can be defeated in 2014?
Again, it's one of these things that doesn't get full discussion, because the concern I've got with this is not even the issue, the greater issue, but the way it's worded is the domestic violence is going to have a problem enforcing it when you have heterosexual couples living together under the way it's worded. So, again, it hasn't been thought out. You want to rush in and change? We already have a statute in Indiana. We don't need a constitutional amendment.
Can it be defeated in 2014?
A lot of it depends. I mean,
you're looking at a 40-10 vote in the state Senate.
Right. Matt Tully had an interesting column in the Star talking about it, putting a lot of the onus on some of the corporations and CEOs who have. We saw WellPoint, we saw Lilly, we saw Cummins opposing the amendment at this level. But how much are they willing to dig into their pocketbooks to mount a public awareness campaign? But just one final thing. You say it's a permanent ban. I think the
it's
odds
constitutional.
I know, but the odds are good.
It's not permanent.
My point would be that nothing is permanent because even
no,
if...
No, but it's darn difficult to change.
It's intended to be a permanent ban.
The 40-10 is a large vote, Jim, but there's another election before that, and I do think the public opinion on this is probably running ahead of the legislature at this point.
Oh, by what? You know, on other issues like there is no such thing as rape and things like that? They're probably a century ahead.
Thirteen Democrats voted for.
Indiana Congressman Mike Pence addressed a Tea Party rally in Washington, D.C. this week. Tea Partiers from around the country are urging Republican House leaders to resist the drive toward compromise in the fight over the federal budget. They chanted, "Cut it or shut it," as they rallied.
Democrats in the Senate may think they have the advantage, but let me assure you, it only seems that way. A minority in the Senate plus the American people equals a majority.
And Delaney, will Mike Pence be a Tea Party candidate for governor?
Sounds like he is, because, you know, if he thinks that the people are on his side, I think he's going to be in for a rude awakening, because the idea that it's my way or the highway, which is how he apparently thinks he can govern, is not the American way. That's not the way legislation is made. That's not the way our democracy operates. But that's the way he thinks he ought to have it. He wants to be a dictator. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays when he runs for election.
We all believe that he's going to announce sometime soon that he's a candidate for governor in Indiana. He continues to speak out in high-profile fashion on federal issues. Does that help him?
Well, he's not exactly a Johnny-come-lately on the federal deficit or the overspending in Washington. Harry Reid is the guy that doesn't get it here. He got up and defended the spending that's gone on this week, including the Cowboy Poetry Institute spending in Nevada as an example of the kind of things that are worthwhile that we spend money on. And Mike's been talking about this ever since he's been in Congress, so it's not like he's a Johnny-come-lately to these folks. It happens that the rest of the folks in the Tea Party have come around to feel that they're right about government spending, and I think that did play out very clearly in the last election, and they're being supportive.
Okay, so he comes back, runs for governor in a Republican primary. You're going to have, at the same time in the Senate race, Richard Murdoch posing as a Tea Party candidate, taking on Richard Lugar, who's a longtime Republican stalwart. And is Pence going to have to pick sides in that one?
I would think that he would rather not, you know, because...
Can he get away with that?
Sure. This is crazy.
I can't imagine he would go out of his way to endorse one or the other. I mean, maybe
pretty simple. All he has to do is say, "I got my own race to run."
Yeah, I mean,
I'm worried about that and not anything else.
But it's problematic.
Well, he can be hooked with it by other people, and so he'll have to deal with that part of it probably.
And he could be asked by the Tea Party to step in.
Well.
I mean, that's clearly the way he's going. He's tacking so far to the right, there's not a lot of room for him anywhere else.
Well,
depends on how he sets his sails, Ann.
I think he's setting them right wing.
Finally, for the second year in a row, the Butler University basketball team is headed to the NCAA Final Four. Coach Brad Stevens and the underdog Bulldogs upset Florida in overtime to win a trip to Houston and an opportunity to win a national championship. Butler won the game 74-71 after trailing by 11 points in the second half.
When we were down 9, there was a media timeout, and we just said, "Score, stop, score, and the game will get a lot tighter." And we did.
Mike McDaniel, is this a fluke?
Absolutely not. This is a great team. You can't call it a fluke when they're getting there 2 years in a row to the Final Four. And we could have a Butler National Championship on the men's side and a Notre Dame National Championship on the women's side.
Here in Indianapolis.
Two Indiana schools as national champions after this next week.
Yeah, you're involved in
the... I'm involved. It's a great opportunity for everybody. Come downtown this weekend and support the Final Four for women. It's great. And I don't think that's a fluke, no. I mean, I think Butler's the only one that thought going into this tournament they could win. And they're the only ones that count in that equation. And they're doing exactly what they should.
Can Butler hold on to Brad Stevens?
I think Butler will hold on to Brad Stevens. And if you look at him and the way he carries himself on the sidelines, that's why that team never folds. They're cool under pressure. They're going to win it all.
Best basketball program in the state?
For the time being.
Can't you ask me that? How much time do we have left?
Just get your IU grad. Give a straight answer.
Just wait for 2 years.
For the time being. That's the best program in the state. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Week in Review under News. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in 1,000 different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the 1,000 and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.